Welcome on in to another edition of Off the Record. We are the official podcast of the Erie Otters and an A-list guest here joining us on the show today. My name is Trevor Cabana and so pleased to be joined by the latest head coach of the Erie Otters, 11th head coach in team history, Chris Millett. Coach, thanks so much for the time.
Forward to our chat.
Absolutely. And of course, timing of this is a very interesting element and I'm not sure when this one will be out, but we are chatting post what happened on Sunday. We'll get into that in a little bit. Of course, the little altercation, I guess, if you will, with head coach Rob Wilson of the Peterborough Petes and everything that went on the ice before that. So we'll get into that a little bit later on in the show. But we're going to kind of talk chronologically, I guess, about how you got into coaching. We'll talk about your playing career and we'll go all around and get to know Coach Millett.
Yeah, absolutely. Where do we start, I guess, is the best question.
I guess let's start with your playing career. Of course, you grew up in Kelowna, right? And then played for the Rockets?
Well, actually, funny story. I was born in Ontario. I was born in North Bay. My dad was in the Air Force, so lived there for a brief stint and lived over in Europe for 8 or 9 years of my early childhood, and then eventually made myself or my way to Vancouver Island, where that's where I was scouted and listed by the Kelowna Rockets, and was fortunate to get up there and play as a 17-year-old, and basically lived there for the rest of my life. Met my wife there at 17. Played 4 years in the Western Hockey League and was able to play, I guess, 9 years professionally, but always going back to Kelowna as our primary residence. And I guess it's been 25, 30 years almost now. So it's crazy.
That's crazy. And again, I think that makes the change in the move from Erie or to Erie from Kelowna even more wild and a wild experience for your family. But in playing, do you have maybe a favorite story of your time in your playing career? I know my broadcast partner and voice of the Otters, Sean Bednard, was all fired up when he found out that you were a Flint General back in the day.
Yeah, I think, you know, being drafted into the NHL was one thing for me back then, but not signing a contract really allowed me to, you know, see some really unique spots throughout my 9 years in professional hockey. And as the career, you know, went on, I got to pick spots that I wanted to go to. So I can walk you through the first, you know, 9 years essentially. So first year, I was actually a free agent invitee to the New York Rangers development camp. Went in there and had a real good camp, was into main camp and actually was injured, blew my knee out there, got kind of tripped up in a tough call. And then at that point, it's kind of scrambling for a place to play. And Louisiana Ice Gators of the East Coast Hockey League reached out and was able to go there with a veteran-laden team. Played there for, I think, 2.5 months, just until my wife Susie came down, and then I was traded to Baton Rouge just down the road. So finished the career that year in Baton Rouge, and, you know, New Orleans for Christmas because we couldn't get home. So got to, you know, eat alligator and so on and so forth. It was really cool. Really great experience. Following season, Asheville, North Carolina. Season after that, Elmira, New York. And that was one of the only places that I played for consecutive years. And that wasn't because I wasn't asked back. I was always offered a contract. But, you know, at this point, you're chasing, you know, the best for your family. And stayed in Elmira for 2 years. And that's where my oldest daughter, Grace, was born. Played there. And then was recruited to go to Colorado, played in the CHL at that point. That year was fortunate enough to win a championship, which was obviously a highlight and the ultimate goal every year. And then from that season, I was now a veteran within the pro ranks. So I was taken first overall by Youngstown just down the road in the expansion draft and flown out first class, picked up in a limo. My wife and I brought, I threw out the first pitch at their minor league baseball and basically wrote my contract. It was crazy. And that year was trying only because our closest opponent was Memphis, which was 700 or 800 miles away. So you can imagine what the road trips were like at that point with a young family. I had my daughter there. So on the road for 2 weeks at a time. Yeah, I mean, it was fun. An expansion team. You got everything and anything that year. We did okay. But then off to Laredo, Texas the following season, back into the CHL, you know, played, went to the finals that year, lost to Colorado, my one of the teams I'd played previously for, and then finished up in Flint, where Sean obviously got to watch me play. And Flint was an interesting season, or seasons, I should say. Got injured my last year, coinciding with my daughter. I was going to probably retire at 30. Didn't want to move her around through when she was going to start school, but got injured, went headfirst into the boards, messed my neck up pretty severely, but worked my way back to health and was able to play. But the very first shift of the game that I came back in was hit from behind and had a concussion that really put me out. And essentially for a full season or a full year, I was back in Kelowna suffering post-concussion syndrome, neck pain. But that's when I started my coaching career. So playing days and then into, 500 games in the minor pros traveling across North America. And again, got to meet a lot of really good people. I got to see a lot of really cool places and wouldn't trade it for the world.
Was there a favorite spot that you played in?
Well, I think the hockey side of things, Colorado was really unique. Much like Kelowna, I think we had sun for 300 plus days of the year. There was snow on the ground, but that year I think we had only lost less than 10 games. So the on ice aspect of it was really, really good. But you pick and choose places, you bring little things like Asheville, North Carolina was a really picturesque, laid back town. Again, it was a bit of a newer team. That was a year that we had, I put up a lot of penalty minutes. You can look that up. Like it was a bit of a gong show there, but we had fun as a group. You take little bits and pieces, memories that are going to last a lifetime.
So you get into coaching. Was there somebody who was a mentor to you that said, hey, I think you would be really good as a coach? Like, how did that process start?
Yeah, I don't think, they always say some of the best coaches were some of the worst players. And I wasn't one of the worst players, but I also knew what I was. I was a student of the game. I wasn't the fleetest of foot. I wasn't offensively gifted. I'd like to pride myself on being a good person, a good teammate. That would stick up for people. And in doing that, you've got to really pay attention because there's a lot of people that are just like that. So you've got to separate yourself somehow, some way. So I really paid attention to it. I was asking the coaches a lot of questions. I was usually in the 9 years, I think I was either the captain or the assistant captain, probably 5 or 6 of those years. So in a leadership role, mentoring people, I think, that's what you're at when you're a coach as well. So I think also that's all I knew was hockey. And I didn't go to school gone are the days of, the choices these young men have. Now, it was either you were a hockey player or you were probably a construction guy or you coached. And I did construction. I didn't enjoy it. And so it kind of just got thrust into it. And it's something that I had been, thinking about down the stretch for sure.
Absolutely. And, walk me through kind of the early days of your coaching career and how you kind of worked your way into the role that you eventually had with the Rockets.
Yeah. So my very first conversation when I did retire and come home due to injury was with my past employer, right? With the Kelowna Rockets, Bruce Hamilton. Went up to him and look for guidance. I asked him, if there was opportunity with the Rockets, and at that point there wasn't. So he had actually suggested to get into, coaching through the minor hockey. Was very fortunate to be put into a position with an ex-NHLer, Brent Gilchrist, who won Stanley Cups just down the road in Detroit. In the late 90s, he was coaching minor hockey in Kelowna, and that's what I did my first year. I had some really good success as a group. We won at provincials, which would be the states and so on and so forth. I think that year we only lost 5 games. Really cool, really, really good introduction into it. It was really positive. And then worked my way to not wanting to do minor hockey again. My next step was Junior B. And, the North Okanagan Knights, I took a position. I think I made $6,000 this year or that whole season. I have 2 kids. I had a wife, I had a mortgage, and credit to my wife because she's like, this is your dream. We're going to figure it out somehow, some way. But I was an assistant coach in North Okanagan. That year we won 6 games. And
1 for each 1,000 you made.
Yeah, exactly. so it was a grind nonetheless. I was traveling an hour and a half every day to to go practice and go to games. But I was able to always come home, which was really, really, you know, unique, and having a young family, really, really special. So did that as an assistant coach for 1 year. Obviously, with the success that we didn't have, the coach at the time wasn't renewed, and I applied as the head coach and was fortunate to get it. I made a huge pay grade. You know, I think I made $12,000 as a head coach.
Doubled it.
Yeah, I was making bank. but yeah, did that, and you know what, had a lot of really good success. That season, from the minor hockey year that I did have, I brought a lot of these young players up with me, and they were familiar with me. I was familiar with them, and we took a team that was very young, the youngest in the league that season, from 7 to 35 wins. And it's a 52 game season. We won 35. So real big step. You know, was voted coach of the year, so on and so forth. The next season, returned back. Now I'm making some money. You know, I could write my own ticket. So it wasn't very much, but it was enough. It was better. But that season, again, had a lot of really good players, had built a reputation where guys wanted to come play, and we went all the way to the finals and lost in the finals again with one of the youngest teams. And then the following season was recruited to Junior A. So first 5 years of my coaching career, minor hockey, 3 years of Junior B, and then just down the road, a little bit closer in Vernon. So Vernon and Armstrong were the Junior B team. They were 20 minutes apart. So now that gave my commute every day was now only an hour. So doing that, Junior A, that year we hosted the national championship. So a lot of eyes on us, a lot of pressure. We did not win, but it was a really cool opportunity there. But every year, I forgot to mention, every year after I was complete, I would go back to see Bruce, and I'd be like, hey Bruce, like, how am I doing? What are they? You're on the right path, just stay, you know, stay the course. So I do the Junior A thing, and lo and behold, that fifth year, opportunity to join the Rockets happens. And
And it all just kind of goes from there. Again, you spend the first handful of years as an assistant coach and then get promoted to head coach. What did those years as an assistant do for you to, again, prepare you for that step to eventually become the head coach?
Right. Yeah, that first season was a dream season, was coaching Leon Draisaitl. We had a lot of future NHLers that have played a lot of time in there. We went all the way to the Memorial Cup, lost in overtime to Oshawa.
Anthony Cirelli, right?
Cirelli.
Scored the winner.
Cirelli.
He's he's still pretty well liked here in Erie, certainly, but I can imagine very different feelings about him in Kelowna.
Yeah, I mean, he scores big goals. That's what he does, and that's what he did. And, you know, it was an unbelievable experience in Quebec that season. But, was fortunate that season to, you know, go all the way. Would have loved to our coach at the time to stick around, to mentor, to teach. But with success, he was able to move on. And he got a job offer quite late in the season with Buffalo. And at that point, we were, myself and the other assistant coach, we had 1 year under our belt. Weren't ready to take over a very good team, which we were at that point. So we went out of house and hired a coach out of the East Coast that lasted a year, and then we hired another ex-NHLer for 3 years, and then another NHLer for a year and a half. You know, as an assistant coach, I had four head coaches. I had four head coaches, and I think I had three assistant coaches. I just put my head down. I went to work. I was adaptable. I learned as much as I could. I learned the league. I learned people throughout the league. It was something that I've passed on to coaches now that have been working with me. Is, you know, I think my biggest attribute and to the success that I've had is I don't think many people can speak poorly about me. I worked hard on the relationship aspect, whether it's a communications guy, you know, a radio guy, an equipment guy, another assistant coach, a head coach, a general manager. I knew multiple people on multiple teams and went out of my way to try and make it as easy as it could be for them. So when I got the opportunity to finally become the head coach, and that was in 2020 when we were supposed to host the Memorial Cup, I had 14 games left in the season, and obviously COVID strikes. I think it was kind of a blessing in disguise. I really do, because our team wasn't nearly competitive enough to really be in that position at that point. I was confident that we could get there, but I think that in hindsight, it was kind of good.
How did that situation almost prepare you for the situation you walked into here? Of course, obviously there you had been working with those guys, where here you've got to learn mostly a completely new group, but you come in with 14 games left in the season and you've got to try to get these guys ready for Memorial Cup, even though what happened, where here kind of a similar situation. Was it 16 or 17 left?
Yeah, I think here's a little, obviously my only, the only people I knew were Dave. Obviously Malcolm and Matthew. I coached Pano and Sam as well through Hockey Canada events. So, you know, say five people in the organization. A little different than taking over an organization that, you know, I blood, sweat, and tears. They saw the work. There were so many people that were so happy and, you know, that I finally had that position. Here, yeah, I think that it was a lot. It was a lot. And it is a lot. But what I can say about this organization is they make it easy. They make it easy on the staff, myself in particular. I couldn't imagine an easier transition. Just how I've been treated, how everybody's been so welcoming, how the players have really, really, you know, made me feel like I've been here for a while, and our staff as well. I've only been here a short amount of time, but it feels like I've been here for a while. So, yeah, it's hockey at the end of the day. Everybody wants to have success. It's just about getting that buy-in.
I know you mentioned it there a little bit. Coaching with Hockey Canada, what has that meant to you, and how important has that been on your coaching style, coaching career?
Yeah, any time that you're fortunate enough to don the maple leaf and represent your country, it's a huge honor. But what the best thing about it, and anybody that you've talked to, it's so refreshing. Like, they give you absolutely no excuses not to have success. Everything is right there for you. All you have to do is coach. Coaches coach. You know, the trainers take care of everything. You know, you're working with elite athletes. I love the pressure. I love the, you know, the expectation. It's made me a better coach to being able to really deal with, again, those elite athletes, right? You're fortunate if you've got one or two on your team, but when you've got, you know, 22 of them and not all of them can dress, you know, the communication aspect of it really comes into play. The trust aspect of it really comes into play. And I think it's made me a better coach to be able to network while you're there as well, not only with the players, but with the staffs that they put together. It's elite. It's a ton of fun.
Well, and again, the networking aspect is a pretty good enough reason why we're sitting here having this conversation, right? Talk to me about how the opportunity here came about and how that relationship with Dave Brown helped to bring this all to light.
Yeah, I mean, working with Brownie over the Hlinka in the summertime. That was my first time meeting him. You know, he worked himself into that position with the success that he had at U17, and typically that's how everything works. And, you know, me kind of being a veteran as a third-year Hlinka staff member, having him come in was just a breath of fresh air. He's such a, you know, he's just such a level-headed, calm person that just, you know, he knows when to talk, he knows when to ask those questions, and he knows when to leave you alone, right? And I think that's the most important thing as a coach there, to have that feel. And I feel that he could figure that out right away, which was so unique that, you know, he knew what we needed when we needed it. He knew, you know, when to collaborate and share. So it was a relationship that, again, we had built over the 3 weeks, had success, you know, and it was something that we had kept in contact after the fact, you know, just text here and there, and that's what it does. And so now, moving forward, how did this come about? Quite unique. I think the Connor McDavid prospects game was going on. I had been let go January 10th. I want to think that they might have had general manager meetings like the 13th or the 12th, and all of a sudden, on that, you know, I think it was a Monday, I was let go on a Thursday, and then on that Monday, I got a text from a few colleagues out here, a few scouts that I know, saying, "Are you going to Erie?" And I was just like, "Pardon? Like, question mark? What?" Like, they're like, "Rumor has it you're going to Erie." And I'm like, news to me, always open for communication. No communication with Brownie, no communication with anybody amongst the group here. A week or so passes, a week and a half. And with me, I think it was probably 10 days after that initial, you know, Brownie reached out to me and just texted me, "Thoughts on Erie?" question mark. And I remembered I was sitting in the parking lot with my wife in Penticton. My daughter was about to play. And I just show her the phone, and because we had been talking, kind of doing our homework, if that was something that was to come about? And thoughts on Erie? Again, question, response, always open to conversation. I know a few good people there, you know, smiley face. And, you know, he's like, okay, well, that kind of started the ball rolling with a little more communication. You know, he knew what I was all about. I think it was very important to the ownership, you know, Jeremy and Ellie and Sheila and family, right? To get a feel for who I was. So I sat and, you know, we set up a Zoom call with Jeremy and Ellie, and we sat for 2 hours and we just talked, and it was just so natural and exciting. And yeah, and basically that was on, I think, a Wednesday. My daughter had a big hockey tournament, and I said, I want to come to Erie. Is that something that could happen? And sure enough, I think 4 days later, I was here.
So for that move, what was the conversation like with your family, and just showing how supportive they are, that willing for you, right? The first time really that you've been separated from them within this coaching journey. Can you kind of talk me through that aspect of all of this?
Yeah, I mean, you can't coach without a support system. You know, my wife, I think 23 years, we'll be married in August. You know, we're high school sweethearts. She's been with me highs, lows, through it all. And then my girls, it's unique. It's 18 years that I've been home with them in some capacity, where, you know, I go away for a road trip, but I'm always home. And, you know, to not have them around, I'll be honest, it's lonely. But it's for them, you know, good thing about technology is we can keep in touch there that way. But, you know, they understand that this is a dream of mine. It's a passion of mine, and they're my biggest supporters. They're like, you're good at this. You know, if this feels right, and which it did, because we did do our homework. I mean, this is, you know, this wasn't a job that I just took because I had to take it. I had opportunity to explore, and I took this because I want to be here. We want to be here, and we feel that from ownership down, there's an opportunity here to do some really good things. So yeah, they're going to come down in, I think, 2 weeks. During spring break, the whole family will come down for a week. And then next year, with my youngest going to Clarkson, my oldest, who was born in New York, and my wife, and possibly my father-in-law, we're all coming out. We're all in. We're looking. So if anybody's listening to this, we're looking for some, you know, a house, a four-bedroom, ideally. So, but yeah, we're all in. It's going to be a busy summer. It's going to be a big move. My wife is born and raised in Kelowna. My girls are born and, you know, they've lived there their whole lives. We're in that, we're immersed there, but we're looking forward to being out here as well.
Absolutely. And, you know, you mentioned kind of getting started here. Obviously, it was a unique situation. You joined the team for a road trip in Owen Sound. You didn't really get a chance to meet the guys other than a meeting the night before that first game there at the Bayshore. Walk me through that. And then obviously a little bit of an interesting situation before you're able to coach your first game here in this building.
Yeah, I think that, you know, it was, we knew immigration was going to be a bit of an issue, but they wanted to get me in as quick as possible. And having the ability to coach in Canada allowed me to do that. So yeah, up early in Kelowna, basically the early Thursday morning, and fly into Toronto and make the trek from Toronto to Owen Sound. I had not seen that much snow in forever. And I thought we were going down a side road. I couldn't believe. And then all of a sudden we show up, and like you said, just kind of walk into the hotel, the lobby. There's a couple guys downstairs. Hey, we should probably have a meeting. Introduce myself, kind of, you know, set that tone right off the bat of, you know, who I am, what, you know, I expect personally. And I say I, but that's just me. But we are expecting now, it's time's gone on. But interesting, jump on the bench, get shelled the first game. I think it was 6 goals on 13 shots. I was like, what did I sign up for? and you know, but I thought as the game wore on, our guys competed, you know, 8-5, great response the next night. And then it's then what was it? Oshawa.
Played a really, I thought from my perch, probably the most complete game of the weekend against a really good Oshawa team. Just didn't get the result at the end.
Right. Yeah. No, I thought that the games did get better as it wore on. Good team. That was a close game, and a lot of fun, but it was a whirlwind Thursday to Monday. And then, basically I could have went home, back to Kelowna based on, you know, not knowing what, the immigration looked like, but I wanted the opportunity that if it was quick, that I could get to Erie as fast as possible. But so I became a roommate of Dave and Michelle in Niagara-on-the-Lake for, I think it was 3.5 days, 4 days.
Weekend at Brownies.
Weekend at Brownies, exactly. And Michelle, what a saint. She can attest, I sat in the one corner on the couch that it probably looked like Bernie just like propped up as if I was just sitting there. But got to meet, you know, a few prospects. I went on some scouting trips with Scott Grieve and met some of our scouting staffs as well for those 2 days. Got to see some of the GTHL games. Yeah, trying to kill some time and just patiently wait. And lo and behold, you know, got in on a Thursday just to play again, like right away. I think today was my third practice that I've run with the group. Like it's been game, day off, game. Like it's been nuts.
Yeah, a lot of games in a short amount of time. And again, it's just kind of that part of the year. It's strange. Again, at time of recording, we're looking ahead to the first 2-game weekend since December. It's been at least 3 every weekend. So coming in at a very busy time of the year, certainly, and getting adjusted has probably been quite wild.
Yeah, again, the organization, the players, the staff, you know, the proximity of my apartment, I can walk here every day, which is great. And I've got familiar faces in there, which is even better. But yeah, right now it's again, every day just trying to get into it more with the players and the guys. It's trying to expedite the process as quick as possible. But so far, it's been really fun.
Talk a little bit about your coaching style. One thing that jumped out to me in that meeting that I was just kind of in and just wanted to make sure I was there in case I was supposed to be, didn't know if I was or not. But one thing that jumped out to me, you know, I might be a little bit fiery, but it's the message. That's what I want the guys to take. Can you kind of talk about that quote and just kind of what maybe fans watching from afar can expect from your coaching style?
Yeah, I'm all in. I mean, it is, I'm loud. I'm a passionate coach with, you know, the corrections or the teaching or the, you know, pat on the back for good work. Like I'm on there. I'm talking to the defense. I'm talking to the forwards all the time. But I see the game differently, I think, in, you know, expectations of certain individuals and then the team themselves. So there are standards that I've seen in this, you know, 10 games that I've coached or 9 games that I've coached that guys have already set for themselves as individuals. Well, once you set that for me, you know, the bar is there. So if you're not meeting or exceeding every day, I'm going to let you know. And again, when I talk about the message, sometimes it's direct, sometimes it's honest. Well, most of the times it's honest, but just listen to it. Just listen to the message and let's have an honest conversation about it. And I think like if it's any indication of how it's being perceived, like every morning the guys are, you know, walking by the office, they're stopping, they're talking, they're asking questions. They want to know just as much about me as I do about them. And I think there's a level of comfort that's maybe heightened a little more after this past weekend's events. But nonetheless, that's the job of a coach, is to build that trust so that they understand that at the end of the day, you have their best interests individually at heart and as the team.
Well, you mentioned it. Let's get into it. Walk me through, from your perspective, what all happened there in the little scuffle.
Jibber jawing. Let me see. At the beginning of the game, it was brought to my attention. Again, I can't see anything that comes during the player introductions, but was told that Charlie was interfered with on his way out to the bench at introduction. Okay, nobody's hurt. It is what it is, and you know, we've got a game to play. And I thought our game was pretty dialed early on. I thought that you know, our execution was good. I thought that our competitiveness was good, and we were being rewarded for it. You know, building an early lead, which was good. I felt that the possession and territorial advantage was in our favor. Then obviously comes the second period, and Charlie's coming to the bench again, and one of their players interfered with him again, and you know, it's a weird coincidence, but it was one of the same players that interfered with him at the beginning of the game. And this time, you know, Charlie goes down and the lights are on and our bench is well aware of it. And our players are well aware of it. And just like any good teammate, emotions start to fire up. And, you know, our guys were well aware of it. They like Charlie. They like the guys around each other. So they were a little, you know, a little upset, I guess. But, you know, again, it's hockey. We move on and we're on the bench. It's a TV timeout. Me personally, I'm trying to calm our group down just to focus on the task at hand. And, you know, we've got a set face off that we're going to run. And, you know, obviously puck doesn't drop. Mess again, just I think the emotions got a little better of him, but he is a player that wears his heart on the sleeve. He's a team first player, and obviously didn't like what had happened to his teammate. It wasn't premeditated by any means. It was just more of a reactionary, emotional young man that is a hell of a teammate and a hell of a person. And you know, that skirmish on the ice is going on, and I say to Wes, to my right, because he was on the right side of me, I'm like, oh man, like, didn't want that. You know, I wanted the play to go on. I really didn't feel that, you know, game was where it was. We had where we wanted to be. But yeah, again, emotions happen and things go. So I'm looking to my right with Wes, and all of a sudden I go to turn to Kenny and who was on my left side, and I see Peterborough's coach literally standing at our door at our bench. And I was like, you just basically came off your bench to now start screaming. And I went over just to get a closer look and a better listen. And yeah, I mean, it would have been rude if I didn't open the door, right? Because, you know, it kind of, and I got pushed. Like, I'll be honest, I got pushed from behind, because again, our group was really tight at that point. I really felt like a pack of teammates that were just there. So yeah, in the middle, I just kept saying that's not who I am. You don't know me. That's not how I coach, and that's not how I coach. Take the player out of me as a coach. I respect the game way too much. I have a lot of integrity as a person to representing the organization, myself and my family, in the right way. And again, I was being told that that's not who I was, and I was just, you know, if you were to watch the video, I'm almost laughing because it is. And that was my rebuttal. You don't know me. Ask anybody that does know me, and they would tell you the same.
And you could see just almost how calm and serene like you were in that moment. Like, how are you able to almost, I don't want to say keep it together, but, you know, come off that way, at least from how far away we are doing the game.
Yeah, that was it. Like, I honestly didn't think much of it. Like, I wasn't going in there to start fighting. I wasn't going in there with intent to, push him over. I was going in there to protect my players, because Mess was then in that fray. So I was getting in there to make sure that nothing was going to happen on that side of it. I wanted to be the wall between our group and obviously theirs. And yeah, it was just, again, I think it brings a lot of attention to the league, to myself and Rob personally, to the Erie Otters. It's not what we wanted, but at the end of the day, again, I think optically it looks a lot worse than really what it was. It was a message that, you know, they thought it was, you know, intentional. It definitely was not intentional. Again, I pride myself on being able to manage a bench, to being able to control it. This is the first penalty suspension fine that I've ever had in my coaching career. So
that doesn't say it. What does?
Well, I mean, again, I respect it too much.
Absolutely. And, you know, a lot of the positives can come out of that. And I know you mentioned almost the moment of unity between the group. How has this almost brought the guys close together as you try to work down this final stretch?
Well, I mean, if it's any indication, you know, post game, in between the second and third, the way that I was perceived personally, you know, from the group was, wow, this guy's got my back, or he's got our back. He's going to do whatever he can to help us. And I think that there's a little bit of a swagger within our room right now. There's a buzz in the town. There's, you know, I think that, you know, whether this brings us together, I think our practices this week have shown that they're buying the message that we're trying to put forward. We're a good team. We're a certain way we need to play, and whether this brings us together, if it doesn't, we at least know that, you know, we are as one. We are a team together. And I do think that there's going to be a buzz in the air tomorrow in the game. I think in the town, there's a buzz. And again, our players, you know, might have grown a few inches, I think, potentially.
Certainly so. And again, as you look down the stretch, final stretch of this season here, what are some goals for yourself for this team as you look to prepare to head toward the postseason?
Yeah, I think it's just continuing to try and find the consistency within. You know, we show themselves having a lot of success, and now it's just trying to continue that for 60 minutes, because there is a lot of skill. There's a lot of heart. There are some very good components within that room. I think it's just believing over and over again that, you know, it doesn't always have to be high risk. It doesn't always have to be highlight. There is a simplicity to the game that I think will bring us more success. So we're trying to show that. We're empowering them to work through it. But it starts tomorrow. I mean, we'll see where we're at with Owen Sound. It's a team that when we were in their building last time, it was hard fought for that win. And then they give it to us pretty good on Friday. So hopefully we'll return.
Absolutely. Well, Coach, this has been an absolute pleasure. Thanks so much for doing this.
Anytime.
All right. That is going to do it for another edition of Off the Record. We are the official podcast of the Otters. Reminder, you can find us anywhere you get your podcast. Just search OTT The Record. For head coach Chris Millett, my name is Trevor Cabea. We'll talk to you again very soon on another edition of Off the Record.